Hello, FCS Nation. It's time for your show. I'm your host, Kevin Marshall. I'm coming to you this week from the lovely Bitterroot Valley of Montana. Join me like he does each week is the co-host of this program, Mr. Stone Labanowitz. Stone is coming to you from his broadcast center in the Sunshine State of Florida. We got a big show for y'all today. We're going to recap the semifinal games from last week, announce who's going to be in the national championship game, if you haven't heard, and I bet you have. And we're also going to sit down with Eric Schmidt, the brand new head coach for the North Dakota Fighting Hawks. Well, Stone, you said in the preseason show that you thought Montana State was a team to beat and they'd play for the national championship. I'm going to give you some flowers here. You were correct, sir.
I appreciate that. And yeah, it seems sweat-free. This is a team that is unblemished. I've mentioned that a few times. And I think at this point, it's common knowledge to anybody viewing the FCS that this Montana State team has not lost and they don't plan on losing. And they'll be participating in the national championship for the ultimate prize. This team's really good. They're really big. They're really old. Everything you need preseason on paper, they had. They checked every single box. And to see it play out and to even tally an FBS win, this team is one of the best we've seen in the past few years, and they're led by a guy that seems like he's just playing some of his best football, which is funny because he seems like he just elevates his play week in and week out.
And the Montana State Bobcats are going to match up against the North Dakota State Bison on January the 6th at 7 p.m. down in Frisco, Texas. Our whole crew will be there. We're going to provide you with unparalleled coverage of the national championship game from down there in Texas. Well, let's just look at what happened last week, how we got to this national championship matchup. And in what was a pretty darn good ball game, and we suspected that it would be, Stone, number one, Montana State beat South Dakota 31-17. South Dakota had their chances here, Stone. They really did. There was one play in particular that I think was very telling about how this game turned out. Aiden Bauman dropped back to pass. There was a blitzer coming who was unaccounted for, and they were able to sack him on a big play. But he had a guy running absolutely free down the sideline. If he's able to get that throw off, it's a touchdown. That's how close this ball game was at times, Stone. South Dakota should be commended. They came out there. Nobody expected them to win. Most people didn't expect them to even compete, and they competed and showed they belonged as one of the Final Four teams in FCS this season.
Oftentimes, we use the phrase, this scoreline is not indicative at all to how this game played out. I think this one falls in that category, too. The scoreline is not indicative of how this thing played out. Of course, it got out of hand down the stretch, but we've seen that. That's a theme for Montana State and what happens to their opponents. They kind of get worn down in that third, fourth quarter, and you have the Humphreys and you have the Jones kind of just wearing and tearing, and then, oh yeah, there goes Tommy Mellott for an explosive. But South Dakota, like you had mentioned, belonged. And it's interesting how there are one or two plays mixed in a game. That's a really good call out. It seemed like it was a big momentum swing. But I think for me, it was the fact that South Dakota needed to play their best ball. That's what it looked like. And of course, they were dogs in this game, but it looked like if they didn't play a perfect game, they had no shot. And it didn't even look like Montana State was clicking on all cylinders. It was just some of their playmakers making plays. So that was a little deflating when you're trying to compare and see if you do match up. But maybe this Montana State team's just that good. But I do want to shout out this offensive line for South Dakota. It was a group that you had been high on early. I've commended time and time again. And you saw in this first quarter that this team was leading the way for them. And Tice busted out for a 50-plus yard touchdown run. And that kind of settled this Yotes team down. And they played a good football game all in all.
South Dakota outgained Montana State 371-358, outpassed them 236-134. Montana State 222 rushing yards to South Dakota's 135. But you look at that 222 for Montana State and you think, wow, the Yotes held them to 222 yards, Stone. That's kind of a product of the kind of numbers Montana State's been putting up. 222 really don't seem like a lot, does it?
It's a good point. It doesn't. And when you look at it, Tommy Mellott, one less carry than their starting running back in Adam Jones. He did most of the damage himself, Tommy. 17 carries, 125 yards, and two touchdowns. So you take him out of the equation, which is an impossible task. And you hold this team to an even lesser amount with their backs. This is interesting the way they play football with Tommy and how they use him because, and I took flack for calling him an athlete and a non-quarterback, but I think he's comfortable in that role. I think he likes where he's at, and I think it's pretty obvious how this staff sees him and just the way that they use him. So he's an enigma to me. I haven't been able to wrap my finger around if he's a quarterback, if he's just an all-in-all football player, but it is a joy to watch. That fumbled snap that he ended up house calling is just, I think, a play that very few kids in the FCS can do. Tommy, one of them.
I mean, at that point, if you're South Dakota, don't you just have to say maybe it's just not our day, right? That's just, what do you do?
I mean, after that, the score is 31-14. 14 and all hope is lost. And it's just like I said, he's an enigma. And I think if you're standing on the opposite sideline watching this kid do this for four quarters straight and then pull that thing out, it's like, come on, like give us a break here. And it's at that moment, you just felt like South Dakota was deflated and touchdown Tommy, the legend just grew even bigger.
In the other national semifinal, North Dakota State 28, South Dakota State 21. This ball game played out like I thought it was going to play out, Stone. I didn't pick the Bison to win, but I picked it to be a pretty darn close ball game, kind of with the scores reversed and the numbers. I thought the Jackrabbits would win, so did you. And this game also turned on one big play, that big turnover when South Dakota State had the lead, had the ball inside their 25-yard line, but they had just gone on a long drive to take the lead, had gotten the Bison off the field on third down, and then they had a fumble, gave the Bison a short field. They tied it up, and you kind of knew at that point that this was going to be a dogfight and one that the Jackrabbits, quite frankly, might not win. That play was just so huge in the outcome of this football game, and you can circle it when it happened. I think you and I both thought, uh-oh, you had a chance to get up 14 points on these guys and make them chase you and eat the football. When you have it running the ball, that was all she wrote right there. I think that was going to be ball game, Stone, for NDSU if South Dakota could have taken that ball down the field and scored and gone up two touchdowns. But they turn it over, and North Dakota State ties the game right up. And it was, all right, it's on. We're in trouble, I think, if you're a South Dakota State fan.
Absolutely. And we've talked about in the past that this North Dakota State team is not a team that's built offensively to play from behind. So when you're watching that game back and you're checking the box score, that is the one that's circled. That is the one that is highlighted. The fact that you did have a chance, you did have that ball with an opportunity to go up two possessions, could have gone up 14 points. And looking back, that is where things turn. And North Dakota State was able to muck this thing up and get it back to where it should have been. It honestly felt like a reset after that. And my stomach kind of started turning upside down because I'm like, oh, great, here we go. We're back to the Service Academy. When you felt like this thing was getting entertaining and you felt like the seesaw could finally sway to one side, I think all in all, and it's been viral and it's being tossed all over the place, Gray Zabel, and you can see on our account, they're not shying away on social media. One of our honorary captains, Gray Zabel, with the picture of him heading out to the coin toss in this semifinal game in Fargo, captioning the deep end. We love it. Hashtag send me. Everything that Tim Polasek preached, every bite that he dropped leading up to kickoff, he meant it. And it was clearly something that he preached to his team because they did drag these rabbits out to deep water and they survived. There's no team better in the fourth quarter than the Bison all season long. Just clutch.
Cam Miller, 13 completions, 179 yards, three touchdowns, all three of them to Bryce Lance, who had a fine day. And on that replay review, with all the times this season and last season that the Southern Conference officials have just not come up almost comically with the right calls when things go to replay, sending letters the next week saying, we're sorry, we didn't mean to, our bad, please forgive us. Stone, when they got that call right on the one-handed reception by Lance, you could have knocked me over with a feather, sir. Cam Miller also rushed for 93 yards and a touchdown. And Bryce Lance, I mean, dude, you look at his numbers for this ball game, six receptions, half of them for touchdowns, 125 yards. With a long of 47. Great ball game for Bryce Lance on the defensive side of the ball for North Dakota State. Logan Cobb had a hell of a game. 10 tackles, double-digit tackles, two tackles for a loss. He was all over the place. And I sit here and I look at these stats, Stone, and I think about this. You said that for Montana State, that Tommy Mellott, if you took away his rushing numbers, that what South Dakota did against them would have been all that much more impressive. Well, when you look at the two running backs that North Dakota State ran out there, one of them rushed for 28 yards and the other one rushed for 23. Cam Miller is as important to his football team and their offensive production as Tommy Mellott is. And I don't think those two are looked at in the same way. I think Mellott is looked at as a fella who, like you said, an athlete more than a quarterback, and Miller gets more credit for being a quarterback when they are almost entirely similar and almost completely the same player. I don't think enough people realize that. It's time for us to take a timeout. When we come back, there's some news from around the football championship subdivision in the coaching realm, specifically, some big names were hired to coach big programs last week. We're going to delve into that just a little bit. We'll give you an update on where we stand with our partnership with Northwestern Mutual and Alex's Lemonade Stand to end childhood cancer in our time. All of that and much, much more is coming up next, right here on FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Thanks for hanging with us during the break. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. In news from around the football championship subdivision, some very important coaching hires were made last week. None more so, I don't think, than Thomas Ford returning to lead the Idaho Vandals football program. He was a running backs coach just one season ago before leaving and going to Oregon State. He comes back to be the head coach of the Vandals from the Beebs. A very good hire for Idaho. It keeps the Eck tree intact there, Stone. And a lot of those Idaho players who had entered the portal, who didn't get Power 4 offers immediately, some of them did, and they left. But the guys that didn't, not quietly, very publicly, came out of the portal because they were happy Thomas Ford returned to Idaho. Continuity like that really means something at this level, doesn't it, Stone?
Oh my God, it's very understated, and I think you're exactly right. When you see players, and of course you're starting to see it all throughout the college football landscape, but to see it at the FCS level, to see it at Idaho is so refreshing because Eck leaves a huge hole up in Moscow, and to see guys in the portal following Eck, trying to shop around, see where else they can go play ball, to come back because Thomas Ford is the head coach now, it's almost a sigh of relief for Vandals fans and for all of those kids who were in that facility, who were a big part of this team this season and last season. You know that that core is still intact, and that is priority number one. And I think if you were to ask Coach Jason Eck, he would have had hoped that this is how it was going to go. So this is very well done from Idaho, from the athletic directors, from that staff who's still there, from this roster. It's very well done, and I think this Idaho team is going to be just as much of a problem as they were this year, next season.
And you mentioned the athletic director, but you also got to mention the fact that the players and the fans really put pressure on the AD there to bring Thomas Ford back. It was a very quick and very appropriate and very well-played social media campaign done by Tubbs at the Club, which is the Idaho Vandals podcast, friends of this program. They made it known what they wanted, and they have some pull there. And also the players and the fans wanted Coach Ford. They couldn't have Eck, they wanted Ford. And sometimes, Stone, when you have these situations where the players want a guy, the fans want a guy, and the administration goes another way, I think we saw that in Fargo recently, didn't we? It can work out both ways. There's no right or wrong way to do that, I don't think.
It's very well done. Very, very well done. And they timed it up perfectly as well. It looked like it was going to be awkward, and it was clunky when Eck was on his way out a day after losing that game. But no, they seem to patch it up quite nicely. It's a successful PR campaign here for the Vandals.
And Stone, when you heard Thomas Ford talk about recruiting in that area, he sang a whole different tune than that fella across the river from Washington State did when he went to Wake Forest, sir. He talked about how hard it was to recruit there. There weren't any players there. Ford comes in and says, we got players here. We want to bring them to Idaho. I think if you're one of those cats who's on the fence about maybe which program you want to go to and you're from around there, I think that answer to that question is pretty damn obvious right about now, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it speaks further to both of our points. This is exactly how you draw it up. Coming in, firing guns right off the rip. Terry Golic, everybody in charge of this thing. It was just executed to perfection here. And the energy that he brings, I think, is something that Idaho fans thought they weren't going to have that. They landed quite nicely on a spot with T. Ford.
And speaking of a guy that has a whole bunch of energy, Brennan Marion is now the new head coach for the Sacramento State Hornets. National FCS fans will know him from his time as the offensive coordinator under Coach Mike London there at William & Mary when they were a very successful program, getting to the playoffs, winning playoff games. He has a very unique offense called the go-go offense. Not my particularly favorite. I like the 4 yards and wait until the play clock is at 1 second to snap it again and then get 4 yards. So we're opposites in that particular way we want it done. But there's no doubt that Brennan Marion is a very innovative offensive mind. He's a younger guy. He has a really big name in the coaching profession coming from UNLV this past season. And the Hornets hiring him has paid immediate dividends as well, Stone. 3-star guys committing to Sacramento State within 15, 20 minutes of him announcing that he got the job, bringing some guys with him from UNLV. He's going to be able to recruit those California JUCOs, get them into Sacramento State. Sacramento State is going to be a problem in the Big Sky Conference next season with Brennan Marion as the head coach there. Prairie View A&M also has a new head football coach. Former Valdosta State head coach Tremaine Jackson heads to Texas to take that same position with the Panthers. He's an impressive guy, Tremaine Jackson. Valdosta State is a wagon in Division II. They just got beat in the national championship game by Ferris State, and immediately Tremaine Jackson takes the head coaching position at Prairie View. Prairie View has a lot of things going for it, Stone. They have have really nice facilities, really nice by anyone's standards, not just by the SWAC standards. They have a fan base that cares. Their administration wants to win. They see Jackson State having a lot of fun and winning Celebration Bowl titles, and they think, well, why not us? Why can't we be on that big stage? Don't be surprised if they're not under head coach Tremaine Jackson there at Prairie View A&M in short order, sir. East Tennessee State hired Will Healy to replace Trey Lamb, who was off to Tulsa just a week or so ago. Will Healy has a good pedigree in FCS. He led Austin Peay through a time where they were among the worst Division I football programs in America, had a long losing streak, got them out of that, took them to the playoff, helped that program. I mean, he resurrected that program. He didn't help it. He resurrected it. And Austin Peay is what they are today, in large part to Will Healy. The guy at UTEP now, he just kind of didn't mess it up. And that got him an FBS job. Healy went to Charlotte, which I think was a mistake. That's a poor FCS program attempting to masquerade as a poor FBS program. I hope they paid well, but Will Healy is back to where he belongs, being a head football coach in an FCS program in the state of Tennessee. He'll do a good job there, Stone.
No, he'll do a great job, and he's already started to do that, hiring Cam Akin and guys like Chad Staggs. Cam Akin, a guy who has been an analyst on arguably the best offense in the SEC the past 2 or 3 years, to bring him in, somebody who rubbed elbows with Lane Kiffin and has spent plenty of time at that FBS level. We're starting to see this almost as a trend, as a theme. And I think as you see these coordinators starting to come down to the FCS level from the FBS level, these coaches understand that if I can take a team and turn them around pretty quickly, and this ETSU team was already competitive. Go ahead and ask North Dakota State. If I can bring this team to a 10, an 11-win season and get to that second round of the playoffs, I myself can be a head coach at whatever school that I choose to do. So you see this, and I think my first thought is a lot of these coaches are starting to use this as just a springboard to go get their own head coaching jobs. But this has been happening all along. It's just a lot more obvious and more public, and here we are speaking about it on national radio in front of thousands of people. But Will Healy, he's the man for the job. And to bring in two home run hires right here, I'll say this right now, as far as an offensive and defensive coordinator standpoint for these new hires, Will Healy has hit the nail on the head earliest and the loudest right here. Say what you want about Brendan Marion, this is a damn good job happening here for the Bucs.
Coming up next will be Gray Zabel, our honorary captain this week. We're going to revisit his interview from a couple of weeks ago. The All-America and probable draft pick offensive line from the North Dakota State Bison. We'll be right back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. And we're back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. We're very pleased to be joined by Mr. Eric Schmidt, the brand new head coach for the North Dakota Fighting Hawks. Thanks for making the time, coach. Really appreciate you being here.
No problem, Kevin. I appreciate you having me on.
Now, you've done a lot of these, I bet, right? Just getting the job. People wanted to ask you a lot about football. We're going to get to that. But I noticed that your first job was in high school football. Tell us a little bit about that. And I want to know, what did you teach, Coach Schmidt?
I was a history teacher, taught mostly seniors, actually taught American government to seniors and taught civics to freshmen. It was probably a mid-level high school in northern Minnesota, Kirkston, Minnesota, one of those one high school towns that everybody rallied around the high school football program. So it was a great experience. Had a guy there that was a great mentor of mine, still is to this day. He was at the press conference the other day. So, you know, you always have some gratitude to the guys that first took a chance on you. And we had a ton of success there. So, yeah, even a lot of those players who at that time, you don't think about it, but I was 22 years old coaching 18-year-olds, but it was, I didn't know what I was doing for the most part that first season, but you learn and make mistakes and learn from those mistakes. And it was a great experience for me. It really taught me a lot. Like, you know, the value of a staff, probably as big as anything else, that, hey, man, if a freshman coach can't make it, then you got to go down and coach the freshman that day. If, the lines aren't painted because, there was other things going on in the high school, then you got to go out and paint the lines. So it just it really taught me the value of making sure you surround yourself with the right people. And that's something that I've kept with me all the way from that first job that I had at Crookston High School.
And having that background as being a teacher, I know that all coaches consider themselves to be teachers, but you're trained at it. Do you think that gives you an advantage in how you deal with people and how you know how people learn? I think it might. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think you're right on, Kevin. I feel like that we want to be elite teachers, right? And there's different ways that kids learn, just like there was, I don't care if you're teaching math, you're teaching history, you're teaching football, you're teaching whatever it is off of it. And I think how you can adapt your teaching styles to your players to make sure that, whatever it takes. Some guys, I think 90% of the kids nowadays are visual learners. So if you just sit in front of them and talk the whole time, they're not going to remember what you said. So you got to be able to talk, you got to be able to take notes, you got to be able to show them, you got to be able to let those guys get up and teach it. Like ultimately, I feel like, if you want to know what you're doing as a player and you can get up and teach it to the rest of the guys in the room, then, you know what I mean? That now you're a master of your craft, whatever that technique is, whatever that route is, whatever that defense is. Like that's the ultimate, spot that we want to get all of our guys to, where they can stand up in front of a wide receiver room, they can stand up in front of a safeties room, whatever room that is. I'm a inside, or I'm a offensive lineman, and I can teach inside zone and tell you what all 11, guys are doing on the field, or at least tell you know what I mean, what where we're making the point to for the mic, where the double team's at, and you know what I mean, and I can teach exactly what the play is supposed to look like. So I definitely feel that. Like, I think everything that we're trying to do, and especially when you're teaching, at a high school level, and then you get to an FBS level and all that kind of stuff, is you still want to try to be really, really simple. All you're trying to do is simple better. And that's something I talk to, my coaches all the time here as we're talking to the guys. Just do simple better than everybody else. We're not trying to, to cure cancer here off of it. Like, be really, really efficient. Make sure you're really clear with your words and your teaching progressions, and keep it simple. That's the best way that players are going to learn.
You mentioned about the importance of a staff. Now you're going to keep the offensive coordinator from the previous head coach. Was it important for you to have some continuity in this staff, a face the kids knew and respected?
Yeah, I think, Isaac has done a great job here. He came in here as the offensive coordinator a year ago. And really, I think, did a great job of holding guys accountable, of really, raising the standard here on the offensive side of the ball, from a physicality standpoint, from an accountability standpoint. And when you do that, like, I just think your best players, those guys, that's what those guys want. They want as much, structure. They want as much, he's done a great job of really, like I said, keeping things simple and really being clear and concise in his teaching. And I just think, the guys, he's super, super low ego and high output. Like, it's just been refreshing to be around him. And he's a tough guy. You know what I mean? He reminds me a lot of Ryan Grubb, who I worked with at the University of Washington off of it. Like, he's an old lineman at heart, and I think, you look at who we are in offense. Like, if we're going to be physical and we're going to be tough on offense, then our offensive coordinator better, be tough, and he better preach physicality and model the way. And Isaac's definitely done that. And, coming in here and just watching all the different rooms and all the different, pieces of the program off it, I was really impressed with, we had four new offensive linemen in this program last year off of it, and four guys transferred out, and most of them transferred, at least two of them, I think, transferred out to higher level programs. So a lot of people thought that was going to be a weakness, of the football team here in 2024, and it was far from that. Like, it was the strength of the team. And I think, a credit to Isaac. A credit to our offensive guys. They did a great job. Trevor Olson too, as well, of rolling up their sleeves, going to work, and that offense took on those guys' personality. So I was really pleased with it, and really excited to be able to retain Isaac. And he did that all in year one. So where he can take this thing now in year two, like, it makes me really excited to have that continuity coming back.
FCS Nation, we're joined by Mr. Eric Schmidt, the new head football coach at the University of North Dakota. Coach, you mentioned physical. You said that a couple of times. And that league that y'all play in certainly is that. It's challenging from top to bottom. There are no weeks off in the Missouri Valley Football Conference. And you're going to switch your defense up. Do you think running the new scheme, it's easier to find players to fit that than what they were doing there before?
I don't know necessarily if it's easier to find players, to fit those systems. I think, what we have to do a good job is really, preaching to our guys and making sure they understand that, hey, if we're going to be a successful football team, we need to be able to run the ball. We need to be able to stop the run. I mean, like I said before, talking about doing simple better. Like, we got to be great teachers. We got to be really good with fundamentals. We got to do a great job of being able to get off blocks. We got to be do a great job of being able to block. And I mean, at the end of the day, like, we want our guys playing fast, we want our guys playing confidently, and we want our guys playing physical. We want to be able to stop the run. We're going to do a great job on defense and making sure that, the math is right. We have enough guys in the box. We always have a tackler, somebody's there that that we want to, be able to get the ball to, that can get at least in a one-on-one situation and get the ball carrier on the ground, and do that play in and play out and be really, really consistent. I was around Sean Lewis here the last couple of years, and we used to always say, and he used to always say, "Hey, we want people that are consistently good, not occasionally great." And that's what we're about. You know what I mean? Guys that can do the right thing and do it at a high level and do it consistently every single day. So, I think, as far as your question goes, once again, about the scheme and finding players, like, for us, I think it's more about developing players. You know what I mean? At this level, you got to do a great job of, especially in the upper Midwest and the places that we're at, like, kids are going to be, three sport athletes. So they're not necessarily going to be football players when you first get them. So you got to do a great job of being able to take those raw materials, take those, those skills that they have, and then start to develop, what you need at those different positions that they need to be able to excel at and make them into football players. So goes back to your question before, like, we got to be great teachers and great developers. Like, that's the biggest thing I think that that our whole program is wrapped around, is a year-round precise calendar of player development, whether that's nutrition, whether that's strength and conditioning, whether that's sports medicine, and then obviously, getting into the football things too as well, and teaching in the classroom and walkthroughs and all that kind of stuff. So that's the part that excites me, is being able to be around a lot of high-level guys, have a lot of success here, the last 5 years, and now using those, those blueprints, taking bits and pieces from what I've learned from all those different, coaches, and making it my own, and now really implementing not just a football team, but a program here that can be successful year in and year out.
Now, I know you played for the Fighting Hawks, but I just got to ask, and you don't got to tell me, Coach, that Alaris Center is something else, right? Is there a Indian burial ground nearby or some sort of voodoo princess that y'all keep on staff there? Because teams come in there with all the fire and vigor in the world, and more often than not, they leave there with a loss. That's a really tough place to play. Your fans have a lot to do with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the environment, right? Like, we talked to our fans here early on in my tenure about, hey, every great program has a following. And when teams come into the Alaris, like, we want it to be an intimidating deal there. We want it to be loud. We want it to be hard for the offense to hear. It's we want it to be a home field advantage. And we talk about it all the time, like, hey, there's an Alaris Center magic there. And I think the players here feel super confident that when they take the field at home, with their record, I think it's like 30-5 over the last, 6 or 7 years here with Coach Schweiger. Like, those guys, there's a belief and there's a confidence that, hey, we're gonna go out here and play well, and we're gonna play consistently. And by the end of the deal, like, hey, we're gonna win this football game. And they've done that over, I mean, a lot of ranked teams. So definitely feel like, it's a great home field advantage. I think it's one of the elite, stadiums in FCS football, and it's something that we got to continue. You know what I mean? If you, like you talked about, this it's a challenging league. You got to hold serve at home. Those opportunities you get at home, you got to make sure you take advantage of them, and that's something that we will definitely emphasize with our players in our program as we go forward.
There's an awful lot of give a damn in Grand Forks, North Dakota, too, about this football program. I know your athletic director. It's funny who you meet on top of a bill on top of a press box in a snowstorm at Washington Grizzly Stadium when they're the athletic director at Eastern Washington. It's funny who you can meet in those type of situations. He wants to win. The school wants to win. The fans want to win. And there's not only just giving a damn, they put their money where their mouth is. There's some impressive facilities going up there in Grand Forks. Just talk about for a little bit what's on the horizon there, facilities-wise, for your program.
Yeah, no, I think, a lot of credit, goes to the administration here, the president, Dr. Armand Kost. Those guys have ponied up from their side of things too as well. And then obviously Bill Chaves, our athletic director, Eric Martinson. Like, we've done a great job here, of putting together a world class, and I mean that, a world class facility here for for player development. And it sits right on what was Old Memorial Stadium, the home of UND football all the way until 2000. And now our guys have, as you walk around the stadium, the one side of the stadium, the west side, all of the classrooms. So it's our study center. It's all the meeting rooms. We have a huge team room in there too, as well. All of our coaches' offices and everything there is top shelf when it comes to all the teaching and learning equipment that our guys can have there. We have all of our athletic administration, and then there's four stories of apartments right on top of it that our guys can live. So it's an athletic village. And then there's a walkway between all the educational side of football that they're going to need, or the educational side of their lives here in Grand Forks and at UND. And then you go to the other side, and it's all of the sweat side, or the development side, now where you're actually in the lab. So it's we have one of the largest indoor practice facilities in the country. It's a full 100 yards. There's another room in there for offensive linemen to be able to go and do all their individual drills too, as well. And then hooked onto that, which will open up here in the middle of January, is a brand new state-of-the-art weight room. It's the largest weight room in the Dakotas, over 10,000 square feet. And then all the nutrition that goes on top of that, the snack bars, the juice bars, and all that kind of stuff that are attached to that. And then a brand new locker room. It's amazing. It's two lounges in there too, as well. So just a tremendous facility for our guys to be able to have some pride in, and really feel good about, what Fighting Hawks football is all about and where it's going here in the future. And then all the other amenities too, as well. Like there's a world-class training facility in there too, as well. Hot and cold tubs and underwater treadmills and all that stuff for recovery. So realistically, like, our guys right now, like, they can live on top of the football offices. They can come down, they can meet, they can study, they can go to class, and then they can walk, like I said, in a walkway and get to the other side and go do their workouts, get their nutrition, eat their meals, recover, all that kind of stuff, and then come back and go to their, take a nap in their apartment. So it is set up for player development. It's super efficient, and our guys are excited. I mean, I think obviously there's been a transition here and all that kind of stuff, and we haven't had a guy really go in the portal, I think, because they're excited about not only, the future of the program with the staff and what's going on here in the offices, but also, they want to take advantage of some of the best facilities, I think, in all of FCS football.
FCS Nation, that's been Mr. Eric Schmidt, the brand new head coach for the University of North Dakota Fighting Hawks. Thanks for making the time, coach. Really appreciate you being here. Looking forward to see what you build up there in Grand Forks.
Thanks, Kevin. Looking forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks for sticking with us during the break. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Guys, you know what time it is. Honorary Captains of the Week, they join me once a show, and this one I'm super excited about. Probably the most anticipated of the year. You can call it saving the best for last because we left all the Dakotas. And first up is Gray Zabel, offensive tackle for the Bison. You hear the name, it rings bells just based off of the body of work that he's put together in his time in Fargo. And alongside him, honorary captain of the week number two, Logan Dosh, managing director of Northwestern Mutual Fargo. Logan, I'll start with you. I appreciate you giving the show some time this week.
You bet. Thanks for having us.
And Gray, to you as well. I know you're super, super, super busy. You're actually on this call right now from the facility. So thank you for giving the show some time this week as well.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
I typically call this my favorite segment of the week. Guys, it's just so much fun to get a chance to learn who these FCS athletes are underneath the helmet and behind the face mask. I think the subdivision isn't covered as much as it should be compared to the FBS. And this is a good platform, a good opportunity for not only Bison fans, but FCS Nation in general to get a chance to learn who Gray is and what he stands for, what he believes in, kind of what he's gone through to get to this point in his life, and has a bright, bright future ahead of him, which we'll touch on that. But our challenge, guys, you know what we do. We have these athletes compete against each other to raise as much money and awareness as they possibly can. Last year was 11 athletes. This year, 12 athletes, 12 universities. As we stand right now, in the first week of December, we've raised over $53,000. That is the athletes doing what they do best and getting the word out and using their name, image, and likeness to point people in the right direction and make sure that they're giving to causes like what Alex Eliminates and the foundation stands for, and that's pediatric cancer, and that's families and children who can't do anything about it. And so that's what we're doing. In the first year, Aiden Bauman raised a little over $9,000-$10,000, and he won the Lemon Trophy. Gray currently sits at $2,000, and our goal a lot higher than that. And we're not done yet. Round one of the FCS playoffs has come and go, and we are into round two. Logan, I'd like to start with this question: why Gray? Why did you guys go after Gray? Why do you guys feel like he's a good representative of what you do?
Yeah, so anytime we're looking for the candidate to get involved, number one, we're looking for somebody that has, all the characteristics that we really want to embody here as a company, Northwestern Mutual. A lot of integrity, a lot of character, doing the right things. And I think he's shown over his time not only to be successful, which I think is equally as important, but also to be able to represent not only us, but what the organization stands for with his body of work, alongside his talent. Somebody that is easy to, as many have hitched their wagon to, and really represent not only Northwestern Mutual, but our Fargo community, for this cause.
Yeah, and Gray, when you were approached by Logan and the rest of the crew, take us through your initial thoughts, kind of what you thought about it when you went home and did some research and why you felt like this was a no-brainer.
Yeah, when I got approached by Logan and Dinger from Northwestern Mutual, I immediately thought this was something I want to get behind. Anything I could do to help out with kind of the fight for childhood cancer. And I know last year there was about 13 guys that had an awesome challenge and they raised a ton of money for Alex's Lemonade. And one of my teammates, Eli Mostert, was a part of that. So this year I was super excited that they kind of picked me to do this. And it was an immediate yes for me, no questions asked.
Did you think an opportunity like literally having a hand in the fight against childhood cancer and putting a stop and saving somebody's life per se? We don't know how far this money goes and the effect that it could have on a family. Did you think something like this was possible or no? Was it just school and football?
To be honest, no, but I'm very grateful that it did happen. Just the opportunity to help somebody out through tough times is kind of what we stand for up here at North Dakota State. Anything we can do to make somebody's life a little bit easier so they can enjoy some time with family and all that. So no, I didn't think so, but unbelievably grateful that we've gotten to this point in my career where I could do something like this to help people.
Logan, my favorite thing to talk about with you guys, and whether it's a managing director, a partner, anybody in the recruiting space for you guys, this is a question that your eyes typically light up and you guys tackle. Why are athletes so key for having them at the forefront of this thing? And why are they so key for Northwestern Mutual? There's stats that get thrown at me every week from you guys that every one in four, whether it's an intern or advisor, played collegiate sports. Kind of why are athletes so important and why does it work so well?
Yeah, I think when you look at what we look for, once again, as an organization, whether it's someone like Gray to help represent us, or whether it's someone in the internship program, as a college financial representative, whether it's a full-time advisor, is any organization is going to look for just those common denominators that they feel like will fit well from, a culture perspective. And a lot of the things that college athletes are naturally blessed with and continue to develop are things that we look for all the time. And I think probably a lot of employers look for, but we specifically want to, put an emphasis on those really important characteristics: the hard work, the discipline, accountability, right? At the end of the day, that really we're going to show up, we're going to do what we need to do, we're going to do it the right way, and then be able to do that over and over and over again, which myself, Derek Dinger, amongst many others, were, former college athletes. And so within that, we feel like we can gravitate towards that and make those connections for all those individuals to say, hey, here's what you're doing now. And, if we're lucky enough, down the road after Gray has an awesome NFL career, you never know what could come full circle. But at the end of the day, it's a lot easier to relate those things of what our day-to-day looks like, because it's similar in a lot of ways to what they've been going through, or, in Gray's situation, what he's been doing for the last four plus years of showing up every day, doing the hard work, having a process-based system, and being able to ultimately go and attribute to a team that's around them.
Poetry, poetry. Having a chat here, Managing Director of Northwestern Mutual Fargo, Mr. Logan Dosh, and of course, the Honorary Captain of the Week, number one, Gray Zabel, OT for the Bison. Gray, what's this mean to you, this partnership, this whole thing that we're doing? Have you had somebody in your direct family, your circle of friends, been affected by this damn disease?
Yeah, this means the world to kind of give back and try and raise some money for a great cause. I know my grandma had cancer. One of my best buddies, or best buddies growing up, their older brother had cancer in high school. So just anything that I can do to kind of do my part to help out in this fight, I want to do it, and I want to try and do it the best that I can.
And Logan, I ask you the same thing. Kind of what's this mean to you? And as you and Derek Dinger kind of tackle this thing together, why do you feel the need to step in? Why do you feel the need to be involved? What is it that drags you in?
Yeah, I think number one, obviously the personal things. My mother had cancer, my grandmother had cancer. Both unfortunately did not end the way we wanted them to, but that doesn't necessarily stop anybody from hopefully providing what we consider, kind of a bright light during a dark time. And I think majority of people deal with some type of sickness, whether that's a friend, a family member, whatever the case might be. And I think a lot of times, when people want to help, it's always in good intentions, but sometimes the best help can come at the darkest times. And so if we can do anything to give our time, effort, and energy to those individuals, I think it can be valuable. And really from a cultural standpoint, we always believe in our office here of a give to get mentality. And we feel like if we can continue to give to others, that those things will come full circle. Hopefully Northwestern Mutual seeing a good light for what we're able to do to give away. And if we're lucky enough to also work with people at some point in the future, hopefully that's just a positive reflection of our organization and what we're ultimately trying to accomplish.
Gray, super busy schedule. You're literally calling us from inside the facility right now. Good luck this Saturday. And seriously, thank you so much for giving the show some time this week.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on to talk about an unbelievable cause that we're doing. And I'm super excited to kind of see the future of FCS. You guys got a fan out of me, and looking forward to you guys' future.
And we're back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Well, Stone Labanowitz, normally this would be the pick segment. Like I said before many times, my favorite time of the week. But we got no game this week, so let's just give a quick preview, quick and hot and dirty, of the national championship game taking place down in Frisco, Texas on January the 6th at 7 p.m. Let's talk about that for a second, Stone. Move the game to Monday. It's a night game. I like it. I like it a lot. Mostly because, guess what? We're on the same station and we're on at the same time as Monday Night Football has been on all year. I kind of like that. FCS football and the Monday Night Football time slot. I like it more than a lot. I like it a whole bunch.
Yeah, but to be truthful, Kev, it's tough to compete with the NFL. We just watched the FBS in their 12-team playoff, the quote-unquote new era. Their asses are like 20 years too late. But they last week tried to compete with the NFL, and they got smashed in the ratings. And we already didn't plan on this being something that contended with those numbers, and now it only hurts that. So for that, I don't like it. But for us to be under the lights in Frisco, I think it's going to be an awesome vibe.
Let's dive into the game a little bit, Stone. I look at this thing, and I'm kind of with you here on how Montana State has played this year. They have played like a team that just wasn't happy with beating the Grizz and having a good season. That's kind of what I got out of the other team in the state of Montana this year. That, yeah, they said they had high expectations and all that, but Montana State expected to be here. Anything less than a national championship this season was going to be a failure of a season for them. And North Dakota State, that is their expectation every season. So we have two teams that have seemed like they're on a collision course for a long time this year in the North Dakota State Bison and the Montana State. Now, North Dakota State maybe had a little bit tougher of a row to hoe to get here than Montana State did. I mean, you got to beat the Jackrabbits twice, and they did, and that's impressive as all hell. But when we talk about the football game, the X's and the O's and the Jimmies and the Joes here, it still troubles me that North Dakota State cannot run the football by lining up and handing it off and pushing you around. I know Montana State can. They've done it to everybody all season. They have that ability to do that. They also have Tommy Mellott and his ability as a runner. For North Dakota State, they have Cam Miller and his ability as a runner and not the ability to line up and run it at you. This is not a very good matchup for the Bison, I don't think. I don't like it much.
Yeah, part of me wants to sit here and say that one team expected to be here in Montana State and the other is just happy to be here, but I sound like a complete idiot because at the beginning of the season, I damn sure know it's a fact. If I walked around that locker room and asked them what the goal was and where they expect to be come the month of January 2025, they'd say in Frisco, what are you talking about? We just didn't have that expectation, I think, early on. It looked like South Dakota State was on track to go back to back to back. We knew what was on this Montana State roster, the most vetted and by average oldest as far as players go, rosters in all of the FCS here. But if two teams on a collision course and you see it's the spread sitting at 3 right now, they think this is going to be a very competitive game. You have two teams that play just identical styles of football, and it's a power of wills, and that's the product you're going to get. You're going to tune in and see big dudes, button face masked for four quarters, both teams trying to establish the run. Both teams like to run their quarterbacks, and those two quarterbacks in Cam and Tommy aren't afraid to put their face in something as well. So this just has the makings of the best possible national championship that we could have gotten in the FCS this year, all things considered. And I think a sneaky advantage that Montana State does have in this game, and you're going to hear if you're listening and previewing all of the North Dakota State Bison fan podcasts, whether it's their radio team, whether you see it on social media, you're going to see them talk and talk and talk about Bryce Lance and if he can carry that performance over to this game. Well, you're giving Montana State weeks on weeks on weeks to prepare for pretty much the only skill player besides Cam Miller that scares you. I don't think Bryce Lance is able. When you talk about both of these secondaries being gettable, I think Bryce Lance is going to have expectations to get off, but I think it's not that hard to put him in a box when you really break down this film. And North Dakota State offensively kind of emptied out the tank. It was their Super Bowl number two, and it wasn't even for the ultimate prize. So everything Bryce Lance does, all of his shot plays, all of the third down plays when they really need it, where they're going to go, that's on tape, and it's very fresh. And I don't think Bryce Lance is going to be able to carry that performance over. So thought of that when you talked about both secondaries being gettable. I think North Dakota State secondary is more gettable than the Bobcats is as it stands right now.
And the Montana State offensive line has been fantastic all season. They're going to be able to run the football. I just wonder if North Dakota State can get off the field enough times. If it is third and three, third and four, over and over again for Montana State, you may as well just move the chains, Stone. They're going to pick that up 90% of the time, it seems like. And North Dakota State's inability, I hate to keep harping on it, but it's true. Their inability to play North Dakota State football and line up and run the football right at you when you know it's coming is puzzling because this is NDSU. That's what they normally do. And they have another Sunday football player on the offensive line who we just heard from, Gray Zabel. And Montana State, they don't give a darn whether you know it's coming or not. They might even tell you which side it's coming to. It doesn't really matter. So in a lot of ways, I think this matchup entirely favors Montana State, and North Dakota State's going to have to play pretty darn well to hang around in this thing.
Yeah, and I would go back to us on air last week talking about how I don't think this North Dakota State team can just lean on people anymore, and how South Dakota State was going to have their way. And I've been called out on X on Twitter for this all week long because that was just a huge whiff, like complete whiff. We didn't see that play out at all. I wish I could go clip that out, both of us, and bring it to this week's episode. And for this national championship game preview, that's what's going to happen here. Montana State is the better offensive line and the better defensive line in the trenches. They're both on paper, on tape, in stature better and get the check in the box over North Dakota State. So I just would bring that over. And I think it's a point we tried to hammer home last week, but got proven completely wrong. But here comes the ultimate test against the team that actually fits that part and is actually able to get things done, and they've done it. I mean, they're undefeated. They haven't lost a football game, but you're about to see some real trench warfare here between a Big Sky and a Missouri Valley for that shiny trophy.
Well, you know me, Stone. I don't mind battling a lost cause, sir. But that being said, it's going to be a hell of a matchup. We hope that everybody who is able can make the trip down. We're going to be there. We're going to get you interviews with coaches and players and people from around both of those football teams. We hope you go to our website, FCSNationRadio.com. Watch our Twitter account, which is at FCS Nation Radio, the number one. We're going to provide you with some great coverage, team coverage of this national championship game. Hang out with us down there in Frisco if you're there. We're not too hard to find. Nobody down there talks like me, and nobody down there has less hair than Stone Labanowitz. We're pretty easy to find. We hope to shake a hand and tell you how much we appreciate you listening all season. And on that note, Stone, I think it's time for us to get out of here. That brings us to the end of another episode of FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. FCS Nation is produced by Mr. Sam Cittadini, co-hosted by Mr. Stone Labanowitz. I'm executive producer and host Kevin Marshall, thanking you for making FCS Nation a small part of your football week. Like I always do, y'all, I'd like to remind you that life's a lot like football. You play by the rules and the penalties won't kill you. Until next week, so long, everybody.